Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. It is 9:10. We start off our show with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. Who's rattling papers over there? Would this be Alan? Joining us is the paper rattler himself, Alan Chartok, our morning edition host, David Gustina.
Hey.
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, Rosemary Armeo. Welcome, everybody.
Hello, hello.
Hey.
Now, you can join in the discussion in this hour. There are myriad ways you could do that. You could go to the webpage, go to our roundtable page and comment there. You could go to the Facebook page, WAMC Radio. You could tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. However, simplest way, and we'd love you to do this if you have ideas during this hour, hey, send us an email. It's the old-fashioned, the old-school way, roundtable@wamc.org. If we get some and they make any sense, Sarah will come in and read them. So first we're going to talk about what is on everybody's minds and everybody's lips this week, and that's the horror that unfolded earlier in the week in Boston at the Boston Marathon. Now, President Obama will be going to Boston on Thursday for an interfaith service to remember the victims. Meanwhile, the numbers continue to mount of those who are injured, maimed. Now there are three people confirmed dead. Dave Gustina, why don't you give us the latest of what we know this morning?
Sure. We'll start with CNN reporting 2 days after explosive killed three people and wounded more than 180 now during the Boston Marathon. Details are continuing to trickle in as investigators sort through evidence. Authorities say they will hold a news conference at 1 p.m. this afternoon. What's new? A lid to a pressure cooker thought to have been used in bombings was found on a roof near the scene of the blasts, a federal law enforcement official told CNN. Investigators are combing surveillance tapes from businesses around the finish line, and they're asking the public to come forward with photos, video, any information that might lead to them to find out who carried out the attack that killed the three people and wounded more than 180 now. Investigators know that the Boston Marathon bombs were contained in ordinary kitchen pressure cookers loaded with shrapnel, but they're still looking for the triggering method. And authorities want to know what the public knows. Obviously, they want you to reach out and keep your eyes open and report anything you find out to local authorities or the FBI. The FBI agent in charge says someone knows who did this, and agents say, provide any clues that you can. Think about what happened that day. If you heard anything about explosions of the date, anything significant that you can help with authorities. State police have responded in force in Massachusetts since the explosions. Officials say more than 100 troopers are expected to augment security today and throughout the day after 160 troopers patrolled within the city. In other news, we see the victims of the attacks, and they are Martin Richard, an 8-year-old boy with what's described as a gap-tooth grin. He's featured in many of the papers today with his sign calling for peace. He was killed in the blast. Martin's mother and sister are among the wounded. His mother underwent surgery for a brain injury, and his 6-year-old sister lost a leg. Crystal Campbell, a 29-year-old woman described by her mother as having a heart of gold. We heard those horrifying tears and about Crystal this morning. The third fatality was a Chinese graduate student at Boston University who had moved to the city last fall, and that student's parents have asked to keep the name and information private.
But that's confirmed. The Chinese consulate.
That is confirmed.
Okay.
That is confirmed, Raymond. And again, a press conference at 1 p.m. today, and hopefully we'll have more information on what's happened in Boston.
You know, the pressure cooker, Rosemary, is an interesting new bit of news because this has been used in Pakistan and in Afghanistan and other places. And the recipe, if you will, to make one of these bombs has been out there.
Exactly.
But that doesn't necessarily point to a foreign agent involved in this bombing. And so what's your take on all this?
I cannot say we debated this in our journalism classes based on the evidence so far. Would you say it's domestic or foreign terrorism? And it's just extremely hard to tell the symbolism of Tax Day and Patriots Day and a mile of a symbolic, important symbolic event, an athletic event, all looks domestic. And that last mile, the 26th mile of the marathon, was dedicated to Newtown, which also also makes adds in the gun thing. So all that looks domestic.
Okay.
But then you have an IED kind of device, which certainly has been used overseas, the method of picking the most visible spot, all those cameras and lots of noise and terror. That looks international.
The instructions are available.
Interestingly, though, nobody... You know, even in cases where Al-Qaeda wasn't involved, which we've later discovered they had nothing to do with this, they jumped in and claimed credit. Interestingly, no one is saying, hey,
we did this.
No
warning and no credit. But, you know, the other thing is that Al-Qaeda has proved not to be stupid, and they change and adapt.
Yeah.
So, again, that's no guarantee that this means one thing or another.
Well, let me throw this to both you and Alan Chartok this morning. The coverage. Now, you mentioned speculation, and everybody is speculating. Is this foreign? Is this domestic? Mm-hmm. Does it have a significance that it was on tax day? Has the press been responsible enough in going for this? Alan, you go first.
Well, I think they have. I mean, look, there are places like the New York POST, which will never.
you can say the name, right? Post.
Well, but they have something on the front page of their paper this morning, which I found fascinating, which is a picture of what they consider to be the bomb bag itself.
Correct. And so, they were showing the video all morning.
Yeah,
of this.
Right there. You see that? That
it's
outlined. Now, I think that the key here is cooperation. And this is always this always has issues between the prosecutors, between the hunters, and between the papers. If you have a picture of the bag, then you have people who have been taking pictures all day long.
This is what they keep, right?
Yeah, the alleged bag. That's right. We don't know that. I said if you have pictures of the bag, meaning. It's a big if, you know, then all day long, people will have been taking snapshots. And that's why this continual call, even if you don't think that you have anything, give us what you have. The papers then become the magnifying glass. They're the ones who show you how important this can be. And I think, frankly, with the possible exception of Fox, which I've heard some bad things about in terms of their reference to the international issue, I think everybody's been playing it pretty straight down the middle.
I have to say that I've seen an enormous difference between the coverage of this event and the Oklahoma City bombing. If you remember that was declared, you know, Islamic Jihad immediately.
Yeah.
Steve Emerson, the expert on Muslim extremism, was on all the TV shows talking about it. We definitely vilified, I guess, all Muslims by blaming them.
Was this lesson learned by Atlanta?
Yes, right. The Richard
Jewell
thing where we pinned it on the media. Well, with a lot of help from the FBI, might I add, pinned this on Richard Jewell right away. I was struck by CNN and NBC were really careful for a long time to call it an explosion. And then Joe Biden came out and said, I don't really know what's going on. I just turned on the television. I just know there's a bombing in Boston. And then they're parsing bombing. Did he have a briefing because he's the vice president and he knows something? Or is it just Joe Biden shooting off his mouth as he has been known to do?
Yes, but you know,
what did that mean?
Well, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. Mm. These guys on the 24 hours and CNN, the 24 hours and MSNBC, the rest of it, they have to find something to talk about. And obviously, the more they are challenged and the more they are competing with the other guys in the same bag, boat, you better believe that some things are going to happen which we're not going to be proud of later on.
And it seems like they always turn to eyewitnesses, citizen reporters, people who are on the scene, which could be fraught with misinformation.
Well, you know, I have to say, I see again the difference between us as news junkies and regular viewers. I was on the television the minute I heard about this, which was on Facebook. I was on. I didn't go to sleep until late. And what we were watching was news gathering. And when you're at a breaking news scene, that's exactly who you do talk to. They're not citizen journalists. They're witnesses. They're victims. They're medical workers. They're police. You talk to everybody you can because you're putting the story together.
This is such an interesting point, because now have we reached a stage, and we'll take a break in a moment and then we'll pick this up. Have we now reached a stage where the news outlets on cable and otherwise are basically like Google? In other words, they're throwing it all out there, and now it's up for you, the viewer to filter it out. It seems to me a great leap. But let's take that angle, and let's also talk about social media and the way that's grown since the events of 9/11 and subsequent terror events, and how you have to filter that when you're trying to figure out what's going on. We're going to take a break. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Alan Chartok is here, Professor Rosemary Armeo, our own David Gustina. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. 20 minutes, actually 21 now after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and David Gustina. Mm. All, by the way, professors in their own right. And so I ask them, because they know a lot more than me about this stuff, in watching the coverage, and it's a relentless, huge, overflowing bag of coverage. Regardless of where you turn, you're going to find it. Now, is it to the point where it is now nearly unfiltered? I watched the BBC at about late afternoon, early evening on the night of the marathon, which I think they were actually ahead of some of the others in saying, well, ball bearings were involved and things like that. But they were interviewing somebody who was working at one of the stands along the marathon. Now, you're getting eyewitness testimony, but is it now up to the viewer to be filtering all this and say, well, this may or may not be true, and this may or may not be important?
Well, I think that there are certain events that the American public need to be part of, and you don't wait until all the evidence is in. And it even predates social networking. If you remember the assassination of John F. Kennedy, we were glued to our TV sets for 3 days watching what happened, watching Jacqueline Onassis crying covered in blood, watching Oswald getting killed. That was not filtered. We didn't then worry about whether we're giving you unfiltered information or not. You were seeing raw history. That's what's happening now. This is a big event. I want to see every minute of it. Happened with 9/11. Happened with the death of Princess Diana.
But you're smart, and you have a ability for critical thinking, and you also have been trained in this. What about the average Joe who doesn't have that training? Alan, what do you think?
Well, I'm with Rosemary. I think that the more information that people get, the more they have to work with. Now, people come into all of this stuff with pre-prejudiced ideas.
Yeah.
And they project the mechanism of projection. They take what they want to have happen, and then they take every word and they work with it that way. So I'm dubious about everybody's ability to do it. I think what's going to happen is the FBI is going to solve this case. I do.
How quickly?
Do
now they're
no,
there.
No, I think they're going to find him, and I think it's going to be fairly quickly.
Well, that's, I mean, what's the alternative, Ray? You go, okay, we had this unfortunate explosion where the FBI is sorting it out. We'll get back to you when they have a suspect.
Well, there's verification. So, for example, the Twitter feed, right? You get this thing coming through. Patrick Dunn just was following yesterday. Was it LaGuardia, Ray?
Okay, and that brings up another topic.
Yeah, just the idea, if it's social media and you're getting a Twitter, and we're getting it in the newsroom, we're seeing something's going on at LaGuardia, but we don't necessarily feel 100% confident in someone tweeting this information as to what is really going on. And so the journalists that we are waiting for something like the AP to confirm or something to come through to tell us this is a legitimate tweet. Do you run with it?
I mean, and by the way, you make a very interesting point. As you remember, when they talked about the bombings, they also added on the fact that something was going on at the JFK library. Remember that?
That's right.
What has happened to that? I haven't heard another word about it.
Well, it was interesting. At first, they said there was a fire at the library. They think it's just mechanical. And then the governor, Duval, and his police commissioner get on. They go, we're looking at it as possibly connected. And then they came out later and said, no, it's mechanical.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess we'll find out later what the deal is. I think there was a fire on the day of 9/11 at the State Department, wasn't there? Was there also a fire that day that was also unconnected?
Yeah.
I mean, strange coincidences, I guess, happened.
But your point is that there's this myriad of information that is coming in on the social media, and sometimes it counts for a great deal. Look at Egypt. Look at some of these other places. And sometimes it's just irresponsible.
Well, it's irresponsible if you run with it. Now, for instance, let me give you
No, it's irresponsible on the part of the projector as opposed to if we run with it. In other words, sometimes people are just putting this BS stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of that going around.
Well, there is.
Yeah.
I keep thinking of the man in Pakistan who who went on Twitter and said, I see helicopters over the building there, and they're dropping something down. And that was the beginning of the raid on bin Laden's place. It came out on Twitter.
Well, I mean, you know, a classic case in point, which no one would know but those of us in the newsroom, was after the Newtown, in the hour or two after the Newtown shootings, Patrick Donges, who he literally watches so many Twitter feeds all
He's
the time.
He's so smart. Okay. Very smart.
And so all of a sudden he came in. I think we were on the air, and he said during a break, just got a tweet that I've been following that the cops have raided a pizza joint, and it's connected in some way. Well, we didn't run with it. Thankfully, we waited, and discretion being the better part of valor, had nothing to do with it.
That's right.
You know. So, you know, my question, has journalism changed in this fast-paced world?
Well, it has, and we are, this will be taken the wrong way, but we're extremely important. I was talking to David Soares, the DA here in Albany, who's a marvelous man, I think, and who's had a lot of guts. I asked him this question. I said, Michael Bloomberg stood up before the world yesterday, and he said, we're taking every precaution in New York City, right? Now, who knew that this last emergency would be in Boston? But here we sit in Albany, New York, in the capital of New York. I don't see anybody standing up and saying, and the media standing up and saying, you know what? If I'm a terrorist and I want to make a point, and I don't want to do it in New York, and I want to keep everybody guessing, well, what about our mayor and others standing up and our governor standing up and saying, we're worried also, and we're putting more resources into the capital of New York. Mm-hmm. And it's up to the reason I say all of this is if the media doesn't say it and it doesn't show it, you know, it doesn't happen.
I don't think journalism has really changed. The technology has. If this had happened 15 years or years ago, 20 years ago, we would be running around looking at whether the fire in the pizza place had anything to do with the event. We'd be talking to all these people. It would just take much longer, and it wouldn't be done in public. I think what you're seeing is news gathering done on public now. And yes, I find it exciting. I know
I love it too. Don't get me wrong. I
love
it
that other people do not. You know, I went out. I took a break from, you know, the watching the events, went to dinner with a cousin. She goes, oh, my God, I don't want to see that bomb go off one more time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, I don't want to see the towers fall one more time. I do. I want to see it
over
and over.
I can understand your cousin's position.
Yeah. They get tired of it.
But I want to say one other thing really quickly, Ray, if I can.
Sure.
And that is, while all of this was going on, we had a double shooting across the street in a bar.
Yep.
From WAMC.
Literally, while it was unfolding in Boston.
Yeah. While it was happening.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know because there wasn't one word about it in the local paper.
Yeah.
Well,
it got online. Yeah. It was online.
Online is different than in print.
Okay, I did
now,
not see it.
Listen, we have about a minute before break. We're going to go right around the room, and we're going to get a quick answer. David Gustina, journalism done its job thus far and done it well in the Boston Marathon bombings?
I think it has. I think, however, I would argue with Rosemary that the definition of a journalist has been expanded.
Okay. Rosemary?
Yes, it has done a good job.
Alan?
Nice strong B.
A nice strong B.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay, well, very good. Now, this is the roundtable on WMC.
What would get it an A?
You know, I don't know. I know it when I saw it.
You know, Alan probably never gives A's. You know, he's one of those, you could have done better.
Nobody's
on this.
Perfect.
All right, now listen. We've talked about whether the press has done its job responsibly. Let's talk after the news about the president and what I think has been a very prudent and cautious approach.
Yes.
Others say maybe not so much. Maybe he was too cautious. I think he's doing everything right. And let's talk about that coming up on the roundtable. And then another timing, what it is, perhaps coincidence, a Ryson letter to a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
We'll do that on the roundtable. Rosemary Armeo is here. Alan's here. David is here. I'm here, Joe.
You can write to WAMC. You can write to Roundtable, right?
WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Thanks for bringing that up, sir.
You're welcome.
Let's take a break for news. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, and we are here. You are there. Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Omeo is here. And also David Gustina. We're joined now by our producer, Sarah LeDuc, who is finding a chair, and she'll read us something, which I don't know what it is. Hello.
Hi. Finding a chair and cleaning up the studio.
Yeah, well, well done. Multitask.
We messed up.
We have one email from Gregory in Hyde Park, New York, who says, I cringe when people, especially journalists, talk about someone taking credit for an act of terrorism. There is no credit to be had in such an act. The more accurate term is responsibility.
Well, I can't argue with that.
All right, then.
Okay. All right. I'm out of here.
That's all you got for us?
Thank you, Sarah.
Can you make something up?
No. All right. People just write to us at roundtable@wamc.org, right?
Yep. And
yep,
thank you,
right.
Sarah.
And I'll keep an eye on it. If more comes in, I'll come in the next break.
Yeah, fair enough. Great. Thank you, Sarah LeDuc, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
So way to go, Sarah. We've talked about the press, and we've talked about their reaction and continued reaction to what is going on in the investigation of the bombings in Boston. And, you know, I'm struck. There was an article in the BBC News website about, it said, Obama's cautious approach on Boston. And it focused on the press conference the president did right after the event. And was he too cautious? And is he being too cautious in his words? And, you know, listen, we can criticize every politician who ever lived, who's in office or who's out of office. But I don't see how you can criticize him in this case. The press conference he gave right after the event was extremely measured. Yes, he did not say terrorism. But at that time, we didn't know if it was terrorism. Right. And so continually, you know, yesterday he said, well, it was clearly an act of terror. You blow some couple things up where there are a lot of people, regardless of who did it, it's terrorism. Mm-hmm.
Well, one wonders, Ray, whether or not that's the David Axelrod's and the other guys saying to him, no, you have to say terror, because it's going to be terror, whether it's a demented person or whether it's a foreign person or not. We know that it is an act of terror. So I have a feeling that what happens in many of these operations, these political operations, are people sit around and they evaluate the news media and how it's coming back at them and what they're saying. And if that's the criticism, then you react to it. It really doesn't matter
exactly
to say that.
Obama was whacked pretty hard during the campaign for not calling Benghazi terror, if you remember.
Yeah.
So I think there is a sensitivity on the use of that word. And a president who is measured and careful, why is that a bad thing?
No, mm-hmm. I have to agree. Now, Condoleezza Rice is somehow in this mix, Dave.
That's right. She was on CBS this morning. She said, while presidents typically want to comfort the nation, it can be difficult for them to do this while saying or doing nothing that would compromise a crime investigation. She says, while the president, Barack Obama, wants to reassure the American people that the government is on the trail, she also says he has to be careful not to give out information prematurely here, and they have to be sure they aren't tipping off the people who are responsible.
So does that mean he knows much more than he wants to say
well,
at
that's,
this point?
Well, that's what I'm reading into it, but I don't know that it necessarily means that.
On the other hand, you see the FBI standing up there and telling everybody what would seem to be everything.
Yes.
But these sometimes there are traps in these things. They don't give out a certain bit of information. And if they find a suspect who knows that bit of information, you know, then, in fact, they know they're on the right track.
And while they're saying there have been these tips that have been flowing in from around the world, they're not saying exactly what they
what
are.
What those tips were. Right?
Yeah. So consensus here is the president is striking the right tone.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting when he goes up there. He's making a trip.
I think that the main thing here is not that he watches himself about giving out details.
But somebody watches for him, right?
Well, no. Yeah. But what I'm thinking is that the emotion that he either shows or doesn't show is going to count for a lot in this. He is a very staid and brilliant man. The question is, can he bring the American people together? Can he show the only thing we have to fear is fear itself? Can he make the case that he is crying for the victims?
Like George W. Bush on 9/11 is when he put that megaphone up and said, well, I hear you, you know. And
unhappily, Obama's had a lot of practice at this. He had to do it after Aurora. He did it after Newtown. In a horrible way, he's getting good at this.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
That's a very good point. This is the Roundtable on WAMC. We're joined by Rosemary Armeo, and we're joined by Alan Shartok and David Gustina. The time is 9:41. So the president will be speaking again, presumably. He's been on a couple of times a day, so I assume we'll get an update from the president.
Well, we see authorities have a news conference ready this afternoon at 1 p.m. Whether that will be combined with a presidential statement, I don't know yet.
In the meantime, and again, maybe it's coincidence, but right after 9/11, there were anthrax letters that went to Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now comes the news that a letter tested twice positively for ricin was sent to Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi. Now, it's a Republican senator. David, do you have anything more on that?
It says authorities aren't saying whether they have a suspect in the mailing of what's believed to be poisonous ricin to Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, but a fellow senator is commenting. Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill says the person believed to have mailed the envelope writes a lot of letters to lawmakers. The envelope containing the suspected deadly toxin was never delivered to Senator Wicker. It was intercepted at a Senate mail facility and will be tested again to confirm its contents. And I do believe that mail facility has been shut down as they go through things today.
You often wonder about who in the mail facility has to open it and see this.
Exactly.
They have hazmat workers in the postal offices.
That's
ricin suggests, if it is connected, you know, the international connection, the big ricin attack was in Japan.
That's right.
Wait, now this was postmarked in, out of...
What does...
That doesn't have
Memphis. Doesn't have that.
Well, no,
was
I think the New York Times there? Says it was postmarked out of Memphis. So it had no suspicious markings or return address, if you're going to send ricin, don't put a return address on it.
It's hard to see how Boston, Memphis, you know, the guy from Georgia is all connected. It's very weird.
We get letters here at WAMC. I get letters at home and here from the same guy, never signed, always threatening. He knows exactly how far to go, what not to say. But yes, I think that this business of McCaskill says we get lots of letters from this person. We get lots of letters here from people and who are clearly, and I know I'm going to be criticized for this, and I apologize to everybody, who are clearly wacko.
Yeah. Now, does that mean you're going to make the rest of us underlings open your mail from now on?
Would you?
No. Well, Danny,
package.
If you give me a raise, I might.
We have a guy who does that. Our Brent does that out front.
He does.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
With a big long claw that he stretches out to open the mail.
So, I mean, these politicians get letters all the time that are nasty and threatening and everything else. This is another level, and of course, the security is pretty high on Capitol Hill in the mail department and otherwise. How about the state governments? How about all the state governments? Are they watching their mail closely enough? I mean, this I would think that in the fallout from the anthrax, when Daschle got the anthrax in 2001, you know, all the state governments clamped down. Are we going to see that again?
Well, I think you're already seeing it. I mean, New York Governor Cuomo has come out and said heightened security at not only all the places where we travel, but in cities and towns across upstate New York to be vigilant, keep your eyes on things. I think a lot of the same things that have occurred when 9/11 occurred are happening again. And certainly in the Northeast, if you look at the various governors and folks in authorities, everything is being cracked down on right now, and now talk of more trouble when we travel.
This is my biggest heartache over this. Well, aside from the loss of life, is that our lives are going to change. We had the Patriot Act as the legacy of 9/11. What will come now? TSA at stadiums and
is that a bad thing though?
Yes, it's a bad thing.
I mean, already. I mean, I've been to Giants games since 9/11, and there are New Jersey State Police there checking everybody walking in. It ain't the worst thing.
That's a loss of our public life, yeah.
I remember.
Well, if you're going to bring a gun to a game, it might be a loss. But otherwise, I feel more safe. I mean, my son and I will walk into a game. Once you get past the troopers, it's just a Giants game.
And that's the attitude, Ray. That's that I'm trading security for freedom.
But it's not.
Don't you think most people would do that?
I disagree. Pardon me?
Don't you think most people would do that trade?
I do, and I think it's a mistake.
And that's how the great dictatorship happened.
No. I'm not trading security for freedom in this case. If you have a guard at a JCPenney's, you are not infringed upon shopping. In other words, me going to a game where there's a policeman standing at the front gate, that doesn't infringe my freedom. He's not doing it. He's not locking me up. If I'm a terrorist, if I have a bomb on me, he's going to take me in.
I mean,
Well, yeah. What?
How does he know that?
Well, I have a 10-year-old boy with me. It's not generally the profile, right? If they engage in profiling, I'm good.
Well, but Rosemary's point is good. She still has to take her shoes off when she goes through the line.
It takes four extra hours to go through an airport.
She has to have some guy examining her body through a thing.
And it's more, the Patriot Act is much worse than that. You know, records are shut down that we used to have openness to.
Well, that's a different argument, I think.
Yeah, I think it's all a continuum. We are trading security for freedom.
Sure. In the old days, you used to be able to walk up to the second floor where the governor is in the Capitol and walk around, see the pictures and all the rest of it.
You could drive past the White House.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, though, this started prior to 9/11, however. I know because our honeymoon was it was in May of 2001. And here is honeymooning Ray at Reagan Airport having to take his belt and shoes off.
Of course.
You know. And this is...
Did you resent it?
4 or 5 months before. I thought it was odd. I mean, I don't fly in general. But I'm saying, well, what are they looking for here? How do I...
I don't mind. My pants will stay up. Without a belt or suspenders. Will yours?
In general... Well, they stayed up at that particular time.
I see.
I think it's easy to make jokes about all of this. I can joke about TSA till, you know, the cows come home. But losing our freedom of movement and our freedom of concern is a very big deal. The terrorists have had an effect.
Should we not do it?
I think that we should take measures and review them and go back over. And that has not happened with the Patriot Act.
Not supposed to be a long-term deal.
Exactly. But it's gone on now for 13 years.
And you think we're being led into a sort of, a dictatorship-like mentality?
I do.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. That's Rosemary Armeo and Alan Shartok, along with David Gustina. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's 9:48. So does... This leads to the question that I've had for a long time. Mm. Does technological and communication advance naturally lead to more ability to control people?
Or the other way around. It may also lead to the ability of people who want to do terror to do it.
So how do how does that twain meet?
Well, your point is interesting because there are surveillance cameras in almost all public places.
There will be more.
And there will be more.
Yes.
Somebody wants more.
Why do you resent
it? King or somebody said that we should have more cameras everywhere.
The whole issue of privacy we have not really worked out in this country, and Europe is much more advanced about personal freedom than we are. But you lose. It's Big Brother. George Orwell wrote about this, a little novel, 1984.
Yeah.
He was a few years late.
We have some problems on our Central Avenue location. And inevitably, the police will show up and ask us if our cameras, which we have, can be used to help them out. I have no problem with that.
That's a specific problem. What if a specific place and a known problem? Now, are we going to do it all over Copley Square because that's where the terrorists hit in Boston?
It's just
an advance. Yeah, it's hard to balance. It should be a balance. And what I'm saying is we have not been balanced since 9/11.
And what would you do if you were a politician in this situation?
Right.
You would go for the security.
That's right.
All right, well, listen, I think that we have more arguing to do on this. So, David, let's take a short break. David Hopper, our engineer. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Together in twilight time.
What's the name of your band?
The Platters. My band is The Platters. All right, Sarah LaDuc is back with us on the round table.
She has a regular chair this time.
All right.
Moving on up
chair.
Nice.
We heard from Carol in Grahamsville who said the senator who received the Ricin letter is a Republican who voted yes for gun control.
For gun control.
That's an inference, obviously, and we will wait for the evidence. But that's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Phil wrote from Averill Park and says, "We bemoan the leap to blaming foreign terrorist organizations when a domestic attack occurs and cite Oklahoma City as an example. But we created the predisposition to do that when we saw massive energy put into explaining Oklahoma as the criminal act of a deranged individual, when in fact he represented the white supremacist anti-government militia organization in our own country as much as an Afghanistan suicide bomber represents Al-Qaeda."
Anybody?
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
It is a good point.
And you're always welcome to write us at roundtable@wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc, you want to stick around?
Nope.
Okay.
I have to write some stuff first.
All right,
later.
She's to the producer. She has better things to do.
And not better.
Much more important.
Equally important, and on the agenda to be, get done. So thank you all.
Do you want to sing something for us before you leave?
No, thank you.
No, not really. We've already sang the hits of the Platters. And that's good enough for now. Thanks, Sarah LeDuc.
Sure.
So Alan, of course, Rosemary, as is his wont, will come up with a story of... Well, it's somewhat humorous in a way, but you're going to tie it into something ostensibly serious.
I talk about it with my artist wife, Roselle, all the time.
All right, so set it up for us in the last six minutes.
The New York POST,
Post,
as usual, comes up with a fairly provocative story, and it's about a woman who, in the name of art, has an art exhibit on Delancey Street.
Okay,
in which she, you know, is posing in all kinds of provocative ways, including taking her clothes off.
All right, so far so good.
Now, as Andy Warhol once said, art is whatever you can get away with.
Okay.
In this case, art has been, the police come in and they say, well, they refuse to make an arrest despite the fact that somebody obviously sent them in there. And she does a range of things that would have gotten you arrested in the old days.
Okay.
In the name of art. So where can anything be art? We saw Mapplethorpe. We saw, we saw people offended. Or is there any point at which, you know, you can say this isn't art, this is something else?
Well,
okay,
you, Rosemary,
so,
go.
I was walking through the capital of Slovenia, Ljubljana,
Ljubljana.
It's beautiful. It's like Disneyland.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm walking through the main square. We're on our way to dinner. I didn't even have my camera. And there in the middle was an art exhibit. Three artists had their easels set up in the road, in the middle of the street, pedestrian road. And there on a stool in front of them was a completely naked man with the most enormous penis I have ever seen.
Ah.
And they were drawing him. And people are walking by. And, of course, they were acting as if, oh, this is art. I'm cool with this. But, of course, they were all, like, snapping their heads over to take a look at it. I, of course, with everyone else, were running home to get my camera and took this picture of it. So I thought, you know, yes, that really is art because it's about human form and reaction to nudity.
And it was one of my favorite tourist stories.
So while I think this is, like, really bad journalism, is that really worth a whole page in a newspaper?
If you got to sell a newspaper, right?
Yeah, sure.
You know.
Sure.
Is it a story?
I think it's a story. The question is, is it art? What is art?
Yeah.
And, you know, the media has a lot to do with defining what that is.
Tilda Swinton, she's the Academy Award-winning actress, very tall thing, British model.
Terrific.
She's got this thing going on at the Museum of Modern Art. So 13 days in 2013, not announced ahead of time, she goes into the museum into a little glass box and falls asleep. And people watch her. They walk by and look at, you know, the
Does
face.
Does she have her clothes on?
She's clothed, yes.
Well, then Alan won't be going.
Yeah,
Ray. This is a serious.
But this
program.
Is a serious. Yes, this is serious. So, and she's done this before. She did this back in the 1990s. Is that art to watch an actress sleeping in a glass box?
I'm asking you. You're the smart ones here.
Well, we have this Abramowitz woman who's setting up a museum in Hudson who does exactly that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Leaves herself there. You're supposed to prod her.
That's right.
So you have no problem with it.
No.
Ray, do you? No, you're not allowed to give an opinion.
With the lady walking around naked in her shop?
Yeah, you got five children. Suppose you were taking them down there.
Well, I wouldn't take them to that.
Well, but you might take them to Delancey Street, and the stuff is in the window.
Ah, well, you know, I don't know.
And what if they turned around to you and said, Daddy, what is that? You make us wear clothes. What is that?
I
think there are any limits on art?
I think there are limits on art, but
about
it comes down to what you like. I don't have to look at that, right?
I think you could even show your children that and say, well, I don't like it. It's, some people like that, and there's a reason for it. I would prefer that you keep your shirt on.
Yeah. Well, I try to tell my kids to do just that most of the time, so... Alan, you brought this topic up. You have a minute and a half to go. I have nothing more to say. You and Rosemary discuss.
Oh, I think we're in a little trouble here.
Why is that?
I have nothing more to say either.
I see.
Rosemary, well, save us.
Did
from
we
the
make you uncomfortable? Did we make you uncomfortable by talking?
Oh, yes, we are. He's a fairly conservative fellow.
Like, fine. if you think there's limits on art, what are they? That's the problem.
I don't think there really are. I think if you dig it, go for it.
Well, yeah. You know, there's a famous Supreme Court justice who said, "I'll know it when I see it," about obscenity.
Yeah.
And so there are those of us who would see
this
woman's
quite not been charged with obscenity, has
no,
she?
No,
I haven't read the article.
No, indeed, no. The four cops came in.
Yes.
They took a look around. She took them for a tour of the art.
Right.
And then they left without making any charges. Now, obviously, somebody sent them in there. What if you were walking down the street and there was somebody just naked walking down the street in
right.
front of you?
I would think it was someone in trouble, and
right.
I would call for help.
But would that be art?
No.
No.
Performance art?
No.
Suppose they when the police came, they said, "This is, officer, I was just doing performance art."
Well, then you get a good attorney, and you get some press, you're good to go, right?
I think there's some laws being broken there. I don't know.
In the case of if this woman in the window and what she happened to be doing in those pictures in the window, I think, you know, don't put them in the window. Put something less provocative in the window.
Well, no, that's the issue.
You can have them inside,
well,
right?
That's the issue. Where does it stop? She had them in the window.
All right, well, listen.
And it was the ultimate, you know, sort of thing.
She was masturbating in those pictures.
Yes, she was.
We didn't disclose that.
As they said, pleasuring herself.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Well,
yes.
Thanks. That's a good way to end the segment. And you can, of course, write us at roundtable@wamc.org. What is your definition of art, and when does it end? When does broadcasting end? Roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. This would have been a great topic for which to open the phones. And I'm sorry we didn't think of it earlier. And maybe
Alan, in
one of his famous open forums, will say, hey.
What is the limit of art?
Can a woman have a little fun in a picture in a window? And we'll find out. All right. Thank you, Rosemary Armeo. Thank you, Alan Chartok. Thanks to Dave Gustina. Thanks to everybody who listened to this very odd hour of the Roundtable. Coming up, some things more conservative. You're listening to the show.